This is the 343 Podcast. I'm your host, John Pronich. Welcome to the show. There is a movement towards possession-based soccer in our country, and it's about time. The possession-based game, in one manifestation or another, has dominated global football for decades. But, unfortunately, it has taken an extreme interpretation and execution of possession in Barcelona or Spain to awaken us in the United States. As a result, the word possession is now commonplace. Commonplace in American media, commonplace in the household, and becoming more commonplace on the training grounds. The gap and challenge, however, is in from mere use of the word to its understanding, implementation, and execution on the field. And it's a challenge that requires not only a big commitment in time and effort, but essentially a complete overhaul, even abandonment, of what's been traditionally done in soccer here at all levels. As a result, there is a lot of friction by established coaches and others in the community whose expertise does not reside in the possession-based game. And as another result, it's parents that are left wondering what's good and what's not. So, in this episode, Gary Kleiben and I discuss what possession soccer means. We also talk about what parents can look for in the team training environment when it comes to possession. And we talk about how technical and tactical development happens in a possession-based system. We'll get started with this discussion right after a quick message about our coaching education program. Thanks so much for tuning in. When it comes to coaching education, being able to discern what will and won't help you can be costly and confusing. The internet is flooded with so much information. There are tons of drills out there for you to watch and tons of things that you can try with your players and teams. But without the proper context and the proper guidance from a legit mentor, you are not going to get the edge that you are looking for or the results that you want. That's what the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program gets right. It's rooted in the real experiences of a master practitioner that has coached soccer right here in America. As a coach, Brian Kleiben has been able to overcome all of the obstacles and produce college-level, professional, and international-caliber players. Training just twice per week, field congestion, pay-to-play, you name it. But using the 343 framework and staying consistent with the methodology has led to tremendous success. What the 343 coaching program offers you is a look at Brian's actual work, his real art. It's all captured and delivered to you in its purest form to help you gain an advantage and become a better coach. This exclusive online program features videos of Brian mic'd up during actual training sessions with his real players and teams as they prepare for league games and tournaments. This is the only program in the country that gives you this type of authentic, behind-the-curtain look at player, team, and coach development. It's unlike anything else in this country. It cannot be replicated, and it's not theory or speculation like you'd see in a presentation or something staged like you'd get at a convention. So if you're looking for drills, we've got those, but more importantly, we have the mentorship, the proven results, and the community of ambitious coaches that you won't find anywhere else. To experience all of this, consider joining the 343 Premium Coaching Education Program. You can find all of the details at 343coaching.com. Have you ever been able to come up with like a clear or a clear definition of what possession soccer is? Is there a universal definition of what possession soccer is or what it means?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any sort of metric. You know, I think back in the day when I first started doing these YouTube videos or instructional stuff, the thing I went with was, hey, count how many five pass sequences a team has. And if, you know, it's a regular occurrence, maybe 25 pass sequences throughout a game, hey, you know what? They might be onto something there. Maybe you can call them a possession-based type team. But if it's below a certain threshold, like you might go a whole match and there's only five pass sequences in total or less, then that's definitely not a possession-based team. Other than that, you know, it's mostly just the eye test But I think people are maybe getting a little bit more sophisticated now than they were, you know, 7-8 years ago. And you can, they're starting to identify hope anyways, a little bit of playing out of the back, you know, if the ball is being circulated in the back four and then, you know, systematically moved up the field to the midfield and the offensive players, then maybe you can say it's more of a possession-based team. We have to be a little bit careful, though, because now that the market is becoming more and more saturated with those types of teams than in the past, there is a next level to possession soccer. And just circulating it around the back and maybe, you know, having, you know, these five touch sequences isn't enough of a criteria anymore. We have to look at a little bit more sophistication.
Well, before we get into the more sophistication, I actually kind of want to go backwards and talk about, like, what is it about a team connecting passes, and you use the threshold of five passes, but what does that do for a team? What does possession do for a team, or why is that the desirable style of play in your opinion? Or I think you even said the right way to play in your opinion.
The angle, we can talk about the team, but the angle I was thinking of more for the episode is the right way for player development. And if teams are consistently connecting passes, and that is what's being taught, you know, in training sessions, that's what's being taught on the weekends during matches, then the individual players, their brains are more activated in terms of analyzing the game situation, because now they're more questions that they are asking of themselves before they even gain possession of the ball themselves. You know, so if you're a right back again and your right center back is receiving the ball, the right back is already thinking, okay, well, you know, we kind of trained this, I might get the ball next, so what am I going to do in my next move? Am I going to attack the space forward? Am I going to immediately one touch back to my center back, or one touch back to the keeper? Am I going to receive and then play my center midfield, or am I going to one touch my midfielder because he's open? So the player is already scanning the field, or is incited to scan the field when you've been training a possession-based system. Versus if you're not training a possession-based system, you're not necessarily, or not, I should rather say, you probably aren't thinking on those levels quite yet. You're more thinking of, I don't know, less. Like, if I get the ball, then I'm going to decide what I'm going to do with it. So from a player development perspective, it develops your brain a heck of a lot more than just playing random soccer and everybody's doing whatever the heck they want, you know, and improvising on the fly. And then on the technical side of the game, you know, if you're training possession soccer correctly, well, you're definitely training with exercises that develop your technique, right? So that you can receive correctly, so that you can properly give a weighted pass to your teammate, so that your teammate has a higher chance of receiving correctly and retaining possession of the ball. So again, we can have a whole discussion about rondos, but we have another episode for that. So all in all, that is what a possession-based style does for individual players at the youth level. And that's why I'm saying that approach is definitely one that everybody should be considering seriously versus just a team that plays randomly.
So if I'm a parent and I'm looking for the right environment to put my kid in, what should I be looking for when it comes to the club training environment? And, you know, if possession soccer is the right way to play, you know, what are some of the things that should stand out to me when I go and I watch a practice, or when I watch my team play on the weekends?
Yeah, if you go watch your prospective team on the weekends, like we mentioned just moments ago, count the number of five pass sequences that a team has. And if it's regularly happening, then you might be onto something. And then take a look if the back line of defenders is circulating the ball, connecting passes, and then, you know, in a constructive, deliberate way, moving passes up forward to the midfield and to the forwards and on the ground for the most part, right? Look for that. And if instead what you're seeing on the weekend is a whole bunch of long ball where you know, players are just kicking it long and in the air forward most of the time, then, you know, be a little bit careful. So that's number one. And then if you go to the training environment, I don't know how many parents do that degree of homework where they go watch the prospective team train, take a look if there's, you know, choreographed training of playing in this manner, as opposed to simply the laying out of cones and, you know, youth players just dribbling around cones and doing little passing exercises.
Can you explain what you mean by choreographed?
So if we have, we just talked about playing out of the back and circulating the ball with the line of defenders. In the training environment, you simulate precisely that. You get your defensive line. Maybe it's the back four. Maybe it's the back four plus the keeper. If you're playing small-sided, 8v8, 9v9, maybe it's back three, you know, and maybe you include the keeper. And you watch as the coach instructs just those players and how they should position their body when they receive the ball, and then how they move it back and forth. So the right back passing to the center back passing it to the left back passing it to the keeper, the keeper giving it to the center back, but all in concert. So for instance, as the ball is moving to the left back should be back paddling all the way to the sideline to increase the space afforded to him and his team. When you're in possession, you need to really spread out and not be clumped together. So that's part of the choreography. The coach should be instructing, as the ball is coming to the left, Jimmy, make sure that you're all the way on the sideline to receive the ball on the sideline. And then as that's happening, the right back should be tucking in towards the middle in case possession of the ball is lost. The right back now is in a good defensive position to make a play if there's a counterattack or something of that nature. So that's just a simple example. Another simple example with the back line is if the ball is then progressed forward, let's say the left back receives the ball and he starts dribbling forward, then the center back and the right back and the keeper should all progress forward as well or step up. Things like that. And all in unison and all choreographed without a repetition being, you know, messed up. Like dancing, like, I don't know, or like an orchestra. Everybody needs to be on the same page. One organism versus 11 individuals. So for instance, the wrong thing to be seeing happening is you just have a static back line where they're just passing the ball to each other and there is no mobility off the ball. Or if the left back dribbles the ball forward, then the center backs and the right back just stand there, you know, watching him dribble the ball forward. That's not choreography.
Another example I see frequently as a coach, just somebody that watches the game, but usually as a referee when I'm in the middle of the field, is that in youth soccer in general in Southern California, there is more of an effort these days to play the ball on the ground and to play the ball from side to side in the back line. But as that's happening, you can see how the players are typically just reacting in each of those moments. There's no clear plan. And what I mean by that is that they're kind of like surprised when they get the ball, or they don't have an idea of what they're going to do next. And so they don't really, there's no, like you mentioned, there's nothing in concert. So it looks like a bunch of fragmented individuals or individual actions. There's no real, idea behind any of it. I don't know how to express that correctly, but there's just an observation that I've had over the last few years of watching teams. Maybe they get it from, watching teams like Man City or watching teams like Barcelona play on TV, and they're like, oh, cool, like we understand that we're supposed to do that, but the coaches aren't training that in practice, so they don't really have the real experience or development happening. And so they don't really, or they aren't really equipped with the right information or right practice to pull it off in a game.
Yeah, and that's what I was mentioning before about now a whole bunch of teams here in the United States. If you go to the game on the weekend, hey, you can see five pass sequences. You can see them circulating the ball in the back, and it's becoming saturated. So I mentioned that there's another level, right? That we still have to be a little bit careful before we pronounce this team a possession-based team for the reasons you just described. Does it really look choreographed, or are the players just saying, oh, I'm supposed to pass it to the center back, and then the center back's supposed to pass it to the, you know what I'm saying? It has, this choreography has to clearly be there. And then the progression into how do you move the ball into the midfield and into the offensive third needs to be choreographed as well, with movements of the midfielders, with movements of the strikers. And then the back line has to be constantly scanning forward and seeing if their peers are making those movements and if the play is on or not, so that the ball can actually progress in a planned fashion. So that's next level stuff. And once you have a more refined eye for that, then you can truly see whether a team is, quote unquote, possession based and being instructed properly, or if they're just being instructed to connect passes, which is definitely not a possession based thing.
And I think that's pretty common these days, is that coaches will just say, you know, keep possession or connect passes. They'll actually use that phrase, connect passes, connect passes. And that's pretty prevalent right now in youth soccer. And I don't want to harp on this, but I just don't see enough of the choreography or the patterns happening on the field to really think that these coaches are doing something, you know, remarkable in training.
Correct. No, the choreography isn't there, John. It's that simple. Choreography and frankly, you know, sometimes it's just not the coach's fault. You know, they just haven't been taught, you know, or they haven't learned these things for one reason or another. But yeah, so that's kind of the angle I was going for, is player development definitely is accelerated and, in my opinion, on the right track if at the youth level you are teaching this sort of stuff versus not teaching this sort of stuff.
I do have one thought, and maybe I can get your opinion about it. It's that possession soccer is typically thought of, I think, you know, when you see a team like Manchester City or Barcelona, it's thought that that style of play is very difficult to play. And the actions that the players are doing are very, very difficult. But I look at it in a different way, is that they're actually executing very simple actions. And it's the teams that are playing long ball style, or kind of, yeah, just kicking it and running, or, you know, playing it in behind or whipping in crosses, that type of style, that's actually highly technical and much more difficult to execute on a consistent basis. And it seems to be that people think that that's easier to do. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, well, I think there's two ways of looking at it. One is, for sure, launching a 40-yard ball over the air and making sure it meets its target destination is a more difficult thing to do than connecting a 15-yard pass on the ground. There's no question about that. And then on the receiving end, the guy who's receiving the 40-yard ball over the air, even if it's on the money, to receive it well and have the first touch drop well, and for that player to, you know, retain possession and, you know, go on the attack or whatever it is that he's going to do, that's extremely complicated also, versus the guy who's trying to receive a 15-yard pass on the ground. So the degree of difficulty is much higher in a long ball sort of setup versus a possession setup. Technically, for sure. The flip side of that is, again, at the youth level, if you're trying to win a game, of course, which is the objective, it's probably more difficult to try to do all this choreography, right, and have the players understand, you know, how to collectively as a team progress the ball forward in a structured, controlled way, all the way to the point where your final action is scoring a goal. That's quite difficult versus, you know, throughout the 90 minutes, however long the game is, just kicking the ball forward the general direction of your teammate. And, you know, maybe your teammate's fast and he can just run onto the ball and beat out the defender in a running match. And then he's one-on-one with the keeper. That's easy. So I think there's those two perspectives.
I don't want people to assume that achieving that style of play is impossible or so difficult that, you know, that's the reason why the coach isn't able to teach that or isn't teaching it in the team environment. And I think that in different moments that I've been watching teams play, that I've kind of just seen the coaches use that as an excuse, like, oh, I don't have the right players, or, oh, this is too difficult for my kids because they're too young, or because I just acquired the team and you know, they're already too old, 15, 16, 17, like they have bad habits or things like that. So I guess I just wanted to maybe try to dispel the myth that it's impossible to play that way.
No, I totally get it. And it is indeed a myth because everything scales down. You don't need to have technical players like Barcelona or Manchester City or Bayern Munich at your U14 on your U14 team. You just don't need that because your U14 team isn't playing in the Bundesliga or the Premier League or in the Champions League. They're playing against other U14 players that are, you know, average Joes, probably just like your team. So, of course, it's doable. You just have to know how to train it. And once you know how to train it and your team starts having a little bit of success, then the players really buy into it. The parents really buy into it. And you as the coach are really going to buy into it because not only is it aesthetically pleasing, but you get this incredible reward that your players are developing and your team is developing and you're winning in a way that's cerebral versus just, I don't know, nonsensically kicking the ball forward and trying to run onto it. But it is 100% doable. You just have to be able to teach it so that your players do have time and space on the ball when they receive it, even if they're not great technically. Well, if you have 4 seconds to receive the ball and then pass the ball, almost anybody can do that.
Which is going back to the point of it's easy to kind of get fooled by teams or players or coaches that, you know, they're able to move the ball in their back line because the back line tends to have the least amount of pressure on it, especially, you know, at different areas of the field. And players can usually pull off, you know, moving the ball from center back to center back, and that can appear as possession soccer. But when you have all the time in the world afforded to you, it's actually, it's quite simple.
100%. And this is, you know, through our programs and our experience ourselves, this is why the attacking third is the last piece of the puzzle that falls in place because it's the most difficult. That's the most congested area. You have a whole bunch of legs, whole bunch of defenders in a compact space. And that gives you less time and space for your attackers and your midfielders to filter their way through that last final line before finishing the playoffs. So if any coach out there is feeling frustrated that, yeah, my team, they circulate the ball in the back, we get it to the midfield, and then, you know what, Gary, it's just, how do you handle the finishing? Like, it nothing happens after that. Well, you know, you're not discovering anything new. That all of us struggle with that. Pep struggles with that. But I think that is the region of space where freedom and true creativity and true improvisation comes into play with your players. If you have a special player up there, then that's where the magic usually happens.
I know that coaches and parents should be encouraging their players to watch and study these types of games. So studying, you know, possession-based soccer, studying how the team moves from one area of the field to the next. And I think if parents and coaches spend the amount of time of showing the kids great examples of this and bad examples, they can begin to maybe see the difference between, you know, how FC Barcelona does it or how Spain does it versus how the Columbus Crew do it or how the U.S. men's national team do it, where you can really see that distinction, I think. And I've noticed it certainly that, you know, when you're able to keep possession of the ball in the attacking third, that is some next level shit. But if you're just able to keep possession around your back line, which is, you know, pretty basic or pretty simple, and then as soon as the ball crosses over midway, then it's like a free-for-all. It's like the Wild West. Well, you know, is there a lot of sophistication there? No, probably not. So the team probably isn't, you know, choreographing or having patterns or executing true possession soccer. So I think, you know, making sure that you seek out the right examples and then not just watching them, but studying those examples, dissecting them, will really kind of unlock a different understanding of what possession soccer truly is.
Agreed. I'll just repeat one thing. If you're going to try to find a club or a coach to go play for, that last thing that you said, where if you go to a match and you see this particular team dominating possession in the opponent's half for an extended period of time, and they're just pinging the ball, probing, trying to find their way in, you know, they can't, but they're in the offensive half. Like, wow, that's you're probably definitely, you know, witnessing something worth considering.
I remember the first American example I saw was, and somebody we've mentioned in a lot of these recent recordings, is Caleb Porter's Akron team. And he was able to demonstrate at that level that, you know, keeping possession in the attacking half, in the attacking third a lot of times, was totally doable at the NCAA Division I level, which had previously thought to be, you know, impossible by many. And he pulled it off. So there, if anybody's looking for a beacon of light, that, I mean, it's already been done.
For sure. You know, and context matters too, because if you're a top level team and you're playing against a vastly inferior team in terms of player quality and roster quality, this display might pop up, you know, in which case, you know, all the credit can't go to the coach or the team. It's just that they're vastly superior. And this is just a natural thing that can happen in a football game. But if the rosters are of comparable strength and this is happening, then Jesus, wow, that's something special. We can potentially talk about professional teams and, again, right and wrong way of playing. I'm certainly still of the opinion that, you know, there is no right or wrong per se, but generally speaking, if you're a team that retains possession over their opponents on a consistent basis over the course of an entire season, you're probably the better team and you're probably higher up the standings than one that is usually dominated from a ball possession point of view. People like to talk about, you know, Liverpool or Club Dortmund or whatever back in the day as not being a possession-based team, or even Real Madrid not being a possession-based team, because sometimes when they would butt heads with Bayern Munich or Barcelona or teams that were of a higher possession-based caliber, you wouldn't see the Liverpool dominate or boss it, or you wouldn't see Dortmund boss it, or you wouldn't see Real Madrid boss it against Barcelona. But against every other opponent, 100%, they own the ball. They're the ones with 60% possession, 65% possession, 57% possession. So indeed, they are possession-based teams. It's just maybe they're a little bit more vertical than Barcelona was during its heyday, where they would have 75 pass sequences. You know, Liverpool doesn't necessarily do that, but it is possession-based nonetheless.
I think another interesting word to throw in there is that even if they are sacrificing possession against a team that likes to dominate possession, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are not still attempting to be the protagonist in the match. So an example would be like Liverpool versus Barcelona. Liverpool needed to score how many goals they needed to score. And so they needed to be the protagonist in the match, but they weren't able to get possession of the ball for long spells. So they had to find different ways to do that. So they had to do that, number one, without the ball. So they had to press and be, you know, defensively, they had to be protagonists. And then when they had the ball, they could not rest on their laurels. They had to figure out a way to do it lightning fast, because they knew that was going to be a very short-lived opportunity. So there's that aspect to it too, which I think is important to mention.
100%. And listen, Atletico Madrid, the same way with Simeone, is everybody, because most of the general public here in the States only watches Atletico Madrid when they're in the Champions League. You know what I'm saying? They're not watching La Liga games. But, you know, in the Champions League, when they butt heads with the Liverpools or the Cities or the Madrids or the Barces or whatever, they're always on in bunker mode, you know, parking the bus and looking for those lightning fast counterattacks and that opportunism. So they're like, oh, they're just a bunker team or whatever. No, they are a possession-based team, okay? And all those other matches, when they're against, you know, equal or inferior rosters, they are the boss. They have the ball and they dictate play in possession. And then it's a conscious effort to bunker down against what they consider a superior possession-based team. And I think that's key to understand. It's a conscious decision. And it's also a choreographed bunkering. Right, it's not just all this wait for them, you know, put two sit in the low block and don't let them penetrate. No, it's all all the movements are choreographed. And then when they spring on the attack, they all have the technical quality and the choreography to be able to, in lightning form, connect their passes all the way to the opponent's goal mouth.
Yeah, I think the important part to point out there too is that the offensive side is also choreographed. And although it might happen in 3, 4, 5, 6 passes, that doesn't make it any less intentional. And that's a big difference versus, you know, if we talk about the youth level again, you know, what happens when there's a breakdown after the third or fourth pass? It's like, okay, well, why was there a breakdown after the third or fourth pass in a youth game compared to, you know, why did Atletico Madrid turn over the ball, you know, with their third, fourth, fifth pass? There's a big difference between those two. And I hope maybe people, if they watch a game on TV or watch their kids playing the weekend, that's something they can pay attention to.
Yeah. There it is. Any other thoughts, John? Any other probing ideas?
No, I think it's a good short episode. Our flagship program helps coaches and trainers discern what is good for their teams and for their players. But now we've created a program for parents. Because parents, you are personal trainers too. Yep, that's right. And in order to properly mentor your player, you need to know what's good and what's not. Just like coaches, you and your player are flooded with thousands of training videos on YouTube and Instagram. But most of them are a waste of time because they aren't relevant. They don't translate to the real game. And figuring out what does and what doesn't and why is just flat out difficult, especially if you don't have a background in soccer to lean on. So we've taken Brian Kleiben's more than 20 years of experience working with teams and individual players from U9 to U19 and extracted valuable lessons that can help you navigate the minefield that is American youth soccer. But this isn't just about drills. That's only a small fraction of it. And to be honest, you can get drills anywhere. What you're getting with the 343 Masterclass are the cultural lessons and an education in philosophy that other trainers and courses don't offer. It's these elements that can help you understand the landscape, read the game on and off the field, and translate everything into real development for your player. Right now, you can get on the list for the 343 Masterclass. We are currently rolling it out little by little to small groups. To reserve your spot, go to 343masterclass.com. All right, thank you for listening. Do you have a question about the topic that we covered in this episode? If so, we'd love to hear from you, and we will be answering some of your questions at the end of next week's episode. Submit your questions on Twitter or head to 343coaching.com to leave your question in the comment section. Make sure that you are subscribed to 343 FM on your favorite podcasting app. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and many more platforms. And if you're feeling super generous, we'd love it if you dropped us a 5-star rating or a review. And don't forget that you can find our entire library of podcast episodes, over 200 written articles, and our online courses that help accelerate the development of coaches and players using methods that have been proven to work here in the United States. Once again, all of that can be found at 343coaching.com. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you next time here on the 343 Podcast.